Hey, sex fans. Welcome back. Today is Wednesday, October 16th, 2013, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge. And I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick.
We've got to stop meeting like this.
Okay, that sounds like a plan. Author, educator, counselor, nurse, and hypnotherapist, the delightful Kathy Labriola, is back with us for part two of her appearance on this, the Sex Education Show. But wait, you didn't miss part one of our chat, did you? Well, not to worry if you did, because you can find it and all of my podcasts in the podcast archive on my site, drdicksexadvice.com. All you gotta do is use the search function in the header, type in podcast 393, and presto! But don't forget to use the pound sign when you do your search.
Hey, what's going on back there?
Back where? You'll find lots of information about Kathy on her fantastic website, cleverly named kathylabriola.com. It's filled with videos, articles, and interviews, and her books are available on there, too. Look for the link in today's podcast posting on drdicksexadvice.com.
Oh, am I sorry.
Not to worry. Today's program is once again brought to you by Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. You know, even though I get tons of email from folks looking for my advice, I can only respond to a limited number of inquiries at any given time. But that doesn't mean that I don't care about everyone who writes in. I do. That's why I've set up the How-To Video Library. You'll find a link to this great resource right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the Video Library tab in the header. The Video Library is the go-to place for all of you who have sexual performance questions. You'll be able to watch all kinds of deliciously entertaining, delightfully enriching, and oh-so-informative videos right from the comfort of your own home.
Eunice! That's a person named Eunice.
Where is a person named Eunice? And remember, a portion of the money that you spend at Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library, educating, enriching, and entertaining yourself, comes back to us as support for these marvelous shows. So knock yourself out. Okay, on with the show. Kathy Labriola, welcome back to DrDicksSexAdvice.com and this sex education show. Holy cow, what a good time we had last week. I'm so glad you're available this week. How was your week, by the way?
I had a great week. Thank you. It's been very busy with seeing clients, teaching classes, taking care of my chickens, and harvesting tomatoes and things like that.
Oh, my. Good for you. Outdoorsy kind of lass, I'm guessing. So, listen, let's pick up precisely where we left off last week. We were talking about the economic pressures that dictate or prohibit women from being free to make relationship choices, and I thought that was really extraordinary. It's worth listening to again. Anyhow, are you aware of non-sexual open relationships, and if so, how are these different from relationships that are part of a sexual bond?
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by non-sexual open relationships.
Well,
I don't know what that is exactly.
Here's an example. Not too long ago, I was seeing a couple in counseling, and the woman was insanely jealous over her husband, his relationship with a coworker, and he could not understand that because he admitted to having this very deep and committed relationship to this woman because they had worked together for a very long time and went through a lot together, but there was no sexual component to it. They were almost soulmates, he would talk about, and this really set his partner, his wife, off. And so even though there were no sexual bonds, clearly there was emotional bonds that there must have been an open relationship, at least in his mind, for this soulmate kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, I just threw that out there just in case that was something that you had something to say.
Yeah, to me that's not about an open relationship because it's not a romantic or sexual relationship. That's more about what I call the autonomy versus intimacy scale in a couple. Some couples are joined at the hip.
Right.
And they do everything together. They spend all their time together as much as possible. Believe that any outside bonds of any kind indicate disloyalty and betrayal, and there are 10 on the autonomy versus intimacy scale.
Right.
That's not very healthy. I usually say anybody between a 2 and an 8 can have a healthy relationship. But if you're above an 8, you're asking your partner to sacrifice way too much to give up their friends and loved ones. I don't know the exact details of the relationship you were talking about, but it sounds like not about an open relationship. It's more about having a life and being able to have other friendships outside of your relationship. And I don't know if in this case, if it was just the wife was jealous because it was another woman, would she have felt that way if he had like a real buddy, close buddy relationship with a guy?
I don't know. Right.
Or was it just that she felt he was giving some of his loyalty, love, and intimacy to someone else, even if there was no romantic bond?
Right. So let's, you mentioned this last week, you have another book. It was published in 2010 by the same publisher, I'm guessing.
Yes, Greenery Press.
Greenery Press. And the title is Love in Abundance, A Counselor's Advice on Open Relationships. Can you tell us how this book is different from the book that we discussed last week, the Jealousy Workbook?
Well, Love in Abundance is covers a lot more territory than just jealousy.
Right. That's what you said that last week.
There are a couple of chapters on BDSM relationships that are open relationships and the particular types of dilemmas and challenges that can come up in those relationships. Mm-hmm. There's a couple chapters on women, feminism, and polyamory and how those kinds of things interrelate or can interrelate. There's a chapter on legal aspects of polyamory, how to protect yourself and your partners and your property and your children, you know, in a situation that is not really well covered in the legal sphere.
Right.
So there's a number of chapters on different models of open relationships and how they work and how to figure out which model is right for you.
Right. Last week we touched on this, but I'd like to go in further if we could. First of all, what first attracted you to study open relationships? Because, as you know, lots and lots of therapists, even sex therapists, I'm afraid, are uncomfortable with anything that veers from traditional monogamy.
Well, I have been a card-carrying bisexual since 1969.
That's a really old card, don't you know? I love it.
It's tattered.
Did you have it laminated, I hope?
That's a good idea. from that time on, as an adolescent, it became clear to me that my affectional and sexual orientation was somewhat fluid, mm-hmm. and that I was capable of being sexually and romantically attracted to people of various genders.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, male and female were the only genders that were traditionally recognized. We've expanded quite a bit since then, but
it was
1969. It seemed to me that it would be foolish for me to promise sexual fidelity and romantic and emotional fidelity
right.
when I did not really believe that any one person of any one gender was likely to be able to meet all of my relational needs
right.
for love, affection, intimacy, emotional support, family, and sex.
Right.
And it proved to be correct that that would have been quite foolhardy for me to promise that, because I would not have been able to
right.
keep that commitment.
Right. Would you consider yourself an advocate as well as an educator?
No, because I certainly could say I'm an advocate of polyamorous rights in the same way that
All
I'm
right.
an advocate of gay rights, but not everyone's gay.
Right.
So advocating for gay rights does not mean you're advocating for everyone on the planet to become gay, although that would
right.
be nice, but they're not going to. I'm also not advocating for everyone on the planet to become polyamorous, because
right.
that would be probably quite harmful to many people who are
right.
not oriented to it.
Right.
Some people do have a very innate orientation towards a monogamous relationship, towards
right.
sexual and romantic exclusivity, and that's the only kind of relationship they will feel safe, secure, and loved
right.
in. So I wouldn't advocate for them to try to change that orientation any more than I would advocate for someone to try to change their sexual orientation.
Right. But advocating for the rights thereof.
Yes.
Yes,
absolutely.
Good, good, good. That's an important distinction. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. Would you say that your attitudes about polyamory have changed over the years?
No, not
no.
at all.
Mm, very cool. Do you consider polyamory a niche movement, or is it a widespread cultural trend? Is there? It certainly is a topic that is enjoying a vibrant media presence lately, but not all that media attention is very positive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the media attention is primarily just sensationalistic,
yes. yeah.
and I don't know that it indicates anything except that, you know, cable TV is always a salacious story.
Right.
So I don't know if it means anything in the long run. Certainly, more and more polyamorous people are coming out of the closet.
That's
and
true
more
enough.
And more people who are involved in open relationships are becoming a little more comfortable being a little more public
right.
about it.
Right.
It's hard to say if more people are in open relationships now or if more people just feel a little more comfortable talking about
right.
it because they're being, or if it's just easier for people who are polyamorous to connect with others
right.
because of the internet.
Yeah, there's a
that obviously has been a huge mushrooming of polyamorous activity in terms of people meeting each other, knowing each other,
right.
having discussion groups, having parties, going, you know, all these different social and political events
right.
to do with polyamory.
Right.
Without the internet, that would never have been possible for people sort of needle in a haystack to find one another.
Right, right. And, you know, I think another barometer is, you know, the amount of or the number of books that are available about the topic. I mean, really, really good ones. I mean,
mm-hmm.
things that I think are just absolutely astonishingly good. And so that must mean, it seems to me, that people are being more conscious about it, and maybe there's a peak in interest. Maybe. I don't know. Who knows?
Hard to say.
Yeah, it is. Let me go out on a real far limb here. Would you say that polyamorous folks seem to be more highly evolved in terms of other aspects of human sexual expression? Lots of poly people I know are into other kinds of kinks, like BDSM and power play, to mention a couple.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a connection, do you think, or no?
Not really,
mm-hmm.
and not in my mind.
Okay.
I think it's just that this is a whole arena of relationship and sexual connection that is now a little more free to flow.
Right.
I don't think that
it's causal
people,
or anything like that.
No, I just think there's more opportunities and more ability for people to have more freedom and are less repressed and restricted.
Right.
And the internet makes it more possible for them to find appropriate partners.
Right.
So I don't think they're any more highly evolved than anyone else.
When folks talk about a topic like gay marriage, particularly traditionalists, they talk about it in terms of gay marriage is somehow going to contaminate or diminish or rip off or somehow lessen traditional heterosexual marriage. Do you suppose the same holds true for polyamory? Do you think that people are fearful of it because it's going to rob monogamy or, you know, traditional marriage of its value?
Yeah, I don't know about that. I've never been able to grasp the anti-gay marriage argument. I've heard them say that stuff over and over again. I just could
like,
never
what?
Figure out how is it somehow supposed to take away something from the straights. I don't know. I don't understand that. It doesn't seem like it would affect them in any way, shape, or form. So I don't see how polyamorous relationships can affect them in any way either.
Right.
I mean, if they're happily heterosexual and if they're happily monogamous, how does something I do over here have any impact on you at all? I don't get that. But I certainly have heard arguments used against gay marriage where they say, well, gay marriage will lead to polygamy and, you know, to bestiality
exactly,
and all these other things.
Exactly.
You know, that they sort of seem to think
slippery
gay
slope.
Marriage is the gateway drug, you know, to these more perverted things, even
than
gay marriage. So,
so
I think for some reason, at least in some people's hierarchy of sins, where us poly people are higher on the evil scale than gay marriage for some reason. I'm not sure why.
Yeah. But it's curious to me because I've heard people talk about that, you know, monogamous people, and say, you know, if we just open the door for this, that anything goes, is how they talk about it, generally speaking, then somehow this is going to contaminate, you know, probably, you know, my partner who is, you know, right now really domesticated, but if he sees, you know, who's going to keep him down on the farm after he's seen Paris, you know? So, you know, we got to keep this under wraps. You know, if there are these perverts out there doing this kind of stuff, we don't want to see it. We shouldn't see it. And, you know, kids will be contaminated and, you know, horses will be scared and all that.
Oh, don't scare the horses.
Well,
no, I think it's, I mean, all that would have to be assuming that people are unhappily repressed into monogamy and that given the option they bolt.
Yes.
And they'll flee and they'll become polyamorous, which it's not really true. I mean, the people that are happily monogamous, it's not going to affect them.
Yes.
If certainly some people are, you know, monogamous only because they think it's the only thing they're allowed to do, and maybe that would the having the freedom to be polyamorous would help them decide, well, yeah, I'd like to try that. But not if they're happily monogamous.
Yes.
It's not going to affect them.
Well, that really comes down to, you know, the operative word happy. And from what we can see, at least statistically, if not more so, that, you know, most marriages end in failure, and most marriages end because of infidelities of one stripe or another. And, you know, like,
or the desire to have infidelity.
Exactly.
Some people leave before they actually cheat because they want to have another relationship.
Right. And so, you know, the question that comes up often is polyamory an alternative to, like, serial adultery or, you know, serial monogamy even?
Well, I certainly would say it is for many people because I think people forget that, you know, 100 years ago, most people died by the age of 50.
Right.
So if you had a marriage that was so-called monogamous, you only had to stay in it for 20 or 30 years, because you're going to, one or both of you is going to drop dead for sure by 50. So,
I love it.
Whereas I think now, you know, we live to be 90 or 100, for goodness sake. The idea of being monogamous for life is absurd. And the fact is that because most people have lots or at least several sexual relationships before they settle down and, you know, with one person, this lifelong monogamy thing is a myth.
Right.
It's if anything, the vast majority of people are engaged in serial monogamy,
yes.
And frequently that includes serial adultery, as you described it.
Right.
So is it really realistic to think that the person you fell in love with at age, you know, 17 or 18 is going to be someone you can live with happily and in a monogamous relationship till you're 90? Yeah. How likely is that?
Right, exactly that. But you know, it's curious that even today, you know, with where we have a great deal more sexual freedom than we'd ever experienced in the past, mm-hmm. it seems to me, still we have this mentality, well, you know, before marriage, if indeed you are fucking around, you know, that's sowing wild oats, blah, 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 and then you settle down, and then, you know, this is a commitment, and, you know, and all that blah blah blah. So mm-hmm. It's curious that we don't take that to heart. Like, you know, like, gee, I had these series of interesting, if not, you know, really wonderful relationships, sexual relationships before I met
mm-hmm.
My current husband or wife or whomever. We don't, you know, bring that into the equation. Well, you know, that was successful because, you know, for any number of reasons, including the variety of it all. Mm-hmm. And we tend to discount that as legitimate information because it was simply sowing wild oats.
And you're going through different stages when you're young, and people don't realize we continue to go through different stages and have different needs as we get older. We don't just suddenly become that person at age 21 that we're going to be for the rest of our lives.
Right. It's curious, though. You know, I do some work with seniors, particularly in terms of making preparations for the end of life and whatnot, and mm-hmm. I often hear, particularly senior women, talk about senior men and elder men that they know, like in senior centers or wherever they're living and stuff like that, and they're socializing with, and the senior men oftentimes are really interested in getting it on, so
uh-huh.
to speak, and these women are ruthless toward them, you know, like, how dare you, and, you know, don't you understand, and, you know, you're just being a pig, and they carry a lot of, you know, that stuff that they must have learned in, you know, the 40s and 50s, unhappily.
Kind of an anti-sex negativity.
Yeah, or, you know, I think they're interested in sex, but they're not interested in casual sex or sex that, you know, doesn't come with, you know, all the trappings that they are familiar
mm-hmm.
with in their previous life. So
they were taught to be ashamed of that.
Yes.
That nice girls don't do that.
And any man who would, you know, pursue that line of interest is, you know, less than, and
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting because at that age, I mean, you don't really have time to court for years, you know. It's like, you want to
come on, come on, let's go.
So let's like hurry it up. Let's condense the courtship a little bit.
Hello,
woo me for two dates, and okay, then we're on.
Really? How about second base? How about just second base then? I don't know. I love it. You're such a joy to talk to. Let's talk a little bit about coming out as poly. Any advice mm-hmm. for those who are taking their first tentative steps out of the closet?
Yes, particularly if you're in a primary relationship or marriage already, and everyone knows you as a couple, mm-hmm. I usually recommend if you have an outside relationship happening, either you or your partner or both of you, and you have this big desire to tell the world about it, including your family and your kids and everything, I usually suggest wait for a year and see if those relationships are still happening
right.
before coming out to your family and your workmates and everything, because most people do not get it right the first time. Most people have to experiment with a few different relationships and different partners before they perhaps find someone that really is going to be a long-term outside partner or secondary partner, or even a co-primary partner.
Right.
And I have seen many people go through hell in coming out to their families and putting everybody through a lot of trauma. And then a week later, they break up.
Right.
Or a month later, the partner
so
leaves.
But what happened to Bob?
What's that?
But what happened to Bob or Jack?
Yeah, suddenly. Well, and after all that, you know, you end up feeling so embarrassed because you've just told your mother, your father, your siblings, your teenage children that this person is so important to you and you're in love with them and they're going to become part of the family. And you've kind of blown your credibility by doing that, and your family members may reject you, or you may have grandparents or ex-husbands trying to take your custody of your children.
Right.
Or, you know, there are some very real consequences.
Oh, absolutely.
I've seen people who their parents have disowned them and rewritten their will, you know, to, you know, cut them out of the will, and then, you know, a couple months later that relationship breaks up and you have gone through that for no reason. So I generally say wait and make sure that relationship is stable and it's going to last at least a year and that your current relationship is strong enough to handle that stress.
Right.
Because coming out of the closet really creates a whole level of stress and trauma for everyone, even though in the long run it's a good thing, and I highly recommend it.
Yes.
Because
yeah.
all that sneaking around and lying is not good for anybody.
Right.
But in the short run, I say keep things private, be discreet, and then when you feel certain that those relationships are going to survive for the long run, that's the time to come out to everyone.
Right. And, you know, that's also my counsel to the clients that I see, too, because in that flush of, oh, my God, I feel liberated, and this is so wonderful, and this is so grand, you know, and I want to invite my partners to Christmas at mom and dad's.
Right,
all of a sudden, you know, that you're trying to bring something to someone who isn't prepared, and a lot of, you know, people might be sympathetic to, you know, our polyamorous lifestyle, but they don't really have a vocabulary to talk about it, and that's probably not the time. You know, a teachable moment is not Christmas dinner. So,
no, absolutely.
So, good.
And why put your partner through that either? You
right.
know.
Yes.
I mean, I also tell people don't expect that everyone's going to welcome this,
right?
Because particularly if your family, your parents are older, you know, from the older generation, why would they accept this?
Right.
This goes against everything they believe in.
Right. And if you
know,
have children.
My parents are whacked out born again Christians. Do
yes.
you think they enjoy and like my lifestyle? No, not one bit.
Uh-huh.
I don't expect them to.
Right.
It would be nice if they were accepting, but they're not. And
yeah.
I don't expect that they
yeah.
would be. It goes
and there's some wisdom in that,
beliefs.
Knowing the difference. Right.
Right. So I'm not attached to getting their approval and acceptance. And I think that's where a lot of people go wrong in
yeah.
feeling like they're going to be crushed if they don't get their family and friends
right.
acceptance and approval. Do you think your coworkers are going to think this is a great idea? Probably not. They're going to tell you you're insane and that you're harming your children
right.
and all these other things. So you can't expect them to think this is a great idea. You have to kind of over time win them over to the idea, and they may never accept it, but you have to be secure enough in yourself that you don't need their acceptance and approval.
Right.
Because you may not get it. You can't count on that.
Good. We have only moments left. Two questions. Who inspires you, and who are your sexual heroes, if you have any?
Oh my gosh, that's a question. I am very. Emma Goldman was an early
yes.
heroine of mine as a child.
No kidding.
And
wow.
Jill Johnston, who's a lesbian writer who wrote for the Greenwich Village, Village Voice, mm-hmm. When I was a teenager, and was a great role model to me
wow.
of the sexually liberated woman and lesbian. So I would have to say those two are heroes to me, heroines to me.
Good, good, good. Listen, Kathy, it's been so wonderful spending so much time with you. I love chatting with you. You get a wonderful sense of humor.
It's been a lot of fun.
Good, good, good. And I think our audience appreciates it too. Before we conclude, would you give us your website address again? Walk us around. Tell us where we can buy your books.
Okay, great. My website is www.kathylabriola.com. Kathy, KathyLabriola.com. And if you go on my website, you can find lots of interesting articles there about open relationships. You can find some videos of me giving talks and workshops about open relationships and jealousy and BDSM and bisexuality and all kinds of salacious and interesting and hopefully educational topics for you. If you happen to be up late at night having insomnia, it will be very interesting for you. And if you feel so inclined to want to buy my books, you can buy them on my website, and or you can get them at www.thestockroom.com or through Green Room Press, my publisher.
Good, good, good. And I have an affiliate at Stockroom, so it's Dr. Dick's Stockroom, and I'll have some links to all of these things, your website and your books, in today's podcast posting. Again, thank you so much for all your precious time. We are the richer for it, and I have a feeling that we are going to be talking again at some point.
I would love to talk again. So many exciting topics that we could discuss.
Thanks, Kathy. Be well.
Thank you.
Bye. Pretty amazing show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. I'm so glad you could join me. Tune in on Monday of next week for the return of the Erotic Mind Show and more sex advice with an edge.
Who is this person?
Why, I'm your host, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. Listen up, buckaroos. Thanks to this amazing technology, you'll be able to watch your choice of smut from the comfort of your own home with just a little prompting from you. They're going to come gushing out of your computer like nobody's business. Check it out. You'll find a link to this fabulous sex resource right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the tab that reads Video on Demand. There is no membership fee. This is a pay-per-minute sort of deal. So your pay-per-view minutes allow you to watch whatever content you want for whatever length of time you choose. Pretty goddarn sweet, huh? And remember, a portion of the money you spend at Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library, educating, enriching, and entertaining yourself, comes back to us as support for these marvelous shows. So knock yourself out. Until next time, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.